Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. When things get as chaotic as they have recently, there's one person I think that cuts through all the crap pretty well and kind of just tells it like it is. So I have the great honor to have back Tom Luongo on the show. Thank you for joining me, sir.
Thank you, ma'am. How are you?
Well, you know, I'm watching things happening and seeing a lot of stuff. And the one thing that seems to be left out of all the conversations, except for probably what you've been writing, is the financial aspect of what is going on in this world right now and how important that is above all else to the battle that we're in. So 40,000 foot view financially, what is really going on?
40,000 foot view, Zoltan Pozsar is going to turn out to be right about everything, that we're headed towards a new Bretton Woods at some point in the future, that the gold and oil markets are the only thing and treasury bonds and a variety of other things clearly, but that we're seeing a shift back towards, commodity-based, money and commodity-based markets. And it's having all sorts of effects geopolitically. That's the real 40,000 foot level. Everything else after that is, you know, just kind of watching traffic splash by and see how everybody reacts to each of the moves that occur. So,
right. Yeah. One thing I see a lot of people talking about are our bond market. It seems to be people talking about it, but like everything else, till I really started working with you, I didn't realize how much fake financial news is out there. You think fake news of the real sort is bad, but the fake financial news is chaotic and crazy. So what's happening to the bond market that people keep kind of hinting towards, but not really saying anything?
Well, the big question here is that we live in a central bank dominated world, right? So everybody, we have now reached the moment in time where it's kind of like Fed policy has become a singularity that everybody kind of has to go and focus intensely on, and we're going to go through that singularity and come out the other side. And what is that going to look like? And a lot of people from my side of the board and from the bad guy side of the board have, I think, they've gotten it wrong. The bad guys are easy. They want low interest rates. They want to change the system but still remain in control of the system. And to do that, they really do want to ultimately keep us enmeshed in a low interest rate environment so that when the system crashes and they take us to war, they will be able to default on all their debts and issue in a new system that they'll still control. The other side of that is that, of course, the people who are, you know, the people I think at the Federal Reserve and I think in New York banking system are like, yeah, that's nice, but we're not down with being sacrificed on that altar so that you can win. And I'm specifically talking here about City of London and Frankfurt, Brussels, that complex.
Right.
At the same time, you then have the Russians and the Chinese and the Eurasian powers, or what is now known as the BRICS bloc,
right,
saying, guys, it's, you know, no longer, you know, your money, our problem. It's our commodities, your problem. And this is, you know, going back to Zoltan Pozsar's note when he was at Credit Suisse 2 years ago, talking about that in Bretton Woods 3 and all of these things. So I want to highlight that what he talked about 2 years ago, and we all the heavy duty commentators on this, myself, right, and Solanchi and others, all went crazy, Zero Hedge and the rest of them,
right,
thinking about what Pozsar was writing about then. And we've talked about it at a very high level. I've done it on my podcast, and we've done it in, you know, hundreds of talks on this to try and figure it out. But it's like right here, right now, Russia, Ukraine, the EU's push for war bonds, the Israel-Iran conflict, all of this stuff comes down to the commodity producers of the world saying, we're no longer going to be price takers of your shitty money. Okay. And what that means is that when you start thinking about it in terms of the yield on sovereign debt, it's what it's doing is effectively exposing the cracks of the old system. Now, that system was great when we were globalizing, but now that we're deglobalizing, right? Now, shipping is no longer global shipping of commodities, of oil, of goods from China and everything else, no longer safe. The Houthis are like winning in the Red Sea.
Yeah.
Right. And so that part of the system is what's under attack, and it's being, we're their effect, as libertarians like to put it, striking the root and saying, oh, by the way, this is reality. And all the rest of it was great when we were at peace. We're not at peace anymore. Now we're at war. And when we're at war, shit stops moving around the world.
Right.
Stuff still moves, but it doesn't move to the same, with the same frictionless impetus that it had before. Now, so the financialization of these markets through the issuance of sovereign debt and more currency to keep everything liquid now carries a risk premium that hasn't been quantified for yet, hasn't been hedged for, hasn't been dealt with. And so therefore, now the risk premium have to rise, i.e. interest rates have to rise. I think the Federal Reserve understands this.
Yeah.
I think the BOJ understands this over in Japan. I think the Russians explicitly understand this. And I think the Chinese are like, hey, let's make a deal. And nobody wants to make a deal because everybody in the West still wants to be able to use that old system to determine interest rate policy, determine commodity prices. So that's why Janet Yellen keeps talking about putting a price cap on oil and it doesn't work. It's why we keep sanctioning Russia. Now this week, we're saying no more Russian copper, aluminum, and I don't know, nickel can flow through the LME or the Chicago Metals Exchange. Why the CME? So, and it's not going to work because at the end of the day, you still have to go and get stuff. We right. have money, they have commodities, and you're going to pay now some large amount of premium to get that, to get those commodities. And we're the price makers and you're the price takers. And it's always been the other way around. We've always lived under the situation where the product commodity producers were the price takers and we were the price makers. And right. under normally functioning markets, that's the way it should be because the consumer is sovereign. The consumer in this respect now is on the other side of it saying we need the commodities to live our lives. But the commodity producers are saying this deal fucking sucks and we're not taking it anymore.
Yeah.
So take your money and shove it.
And there we're
not doing this anymore. Right. So there, let's invoke Johnny Paycheck and let's go all the way back to the 1970s.
Yeah. And the whole, look, everything is, I feel like we're in a snow globe and it's all shaken up right now and it's not landed mm-hmm. and it's just going around in circles and everything's figuring itself out and it will figure itself out. I mm-hmm. actually thought of you this week because you are a libertarian that really walks the walk and talks the talk. And I see a lot of people out there kind of leaning towards libertarianism on both sides at this point, thinking, mm-hmm. Really reevaluating that not only is there no left and right Republican and Democrat, but that they're fools to think there is. And there seems to be a right. bigger movement towards, what is going on our entire. I mean, I really do feel the 702 warrantless surveillance vote was a breaker for both sides of people that were kind of towards the middle, but like identifying as one or the other still somehow, we're thinking, oh my God, they're all against us. So when I saw yeah. the 702 warrantless surveillance thing go through, I thought of you and other true libertarians, and I wanted your take on it because that is the tip of the iceberg as to how much we are being surveilled. People have to understand this is the 702 warrantless surveillance is nothing compared to everything that came out of the unconstitutional Patriot Act and has since spawned a fourth branch of government that has usurped mm-hmm. all of our privacy. So you're watching this and you're watching the 702 debate. What are your thoughts?
Well, the funny thing about it is I look at it from as everything else, like I look at it in terms of timing, right?
Okay.
And we've got this Ukraine aid bill that they are desperate to pass through. You've got Ukraine losing badly. You've got all of Project Europe is all in on getting the United States to fight World War III, like we fought World War II and World War I on their behalf. For fights they picked with the Russians and the Germans, or they picked with the Russians through the Germans, to be more accurate.
Exactly.
And I look at this FISA thing and I'm like, to me, it just felt like chum. I hate to be cynical about it, but it's like, hey, let's throw this out there now, because right now they're the two most hated men in America are Jerome Powell, because he won't cut interest rates, and Mike Johnson, because he's a speaker with a one seat majority trying to hold back a fucking tidal wave
right.
of crap being thrown at us. So I looked at the FISA thing and I said to myself, really, why is everybody getting so upset about this? Like, did you really think that in 2024 America with Obama in charge and Davos still running around, yeah, regardless of the fact that Klaus Schwab's in the hospital, that we would give up the FISA courts at this moment? Are you out of your minds? Like, no, as Mad Max put it in Fury Road, that's bait. That is
right.
That's all that is.
I thought bait. In my head, like what, do these people think
to finish the point,
go ahead.
that was created to make sure that Johnson was the guy who had to cast the deciding vote because there were 12 not presents. So we can activate Marjorie Taylor Greene, who I don't trust as far as I can fucking throw her, or any of these other people who, as far as I'm concerned, I'm at the point now where like Marjorie Taylor Greene is AOC for MAGA tards. That's the way I see her. Okay. Straight from central casting, from a Georgia GOP that's as compromised as any state party you could possibly imagine, all run by old guard Republicans, all the rest of it. So I look at this and I say to myself, you know, even if she's just, you know, just a useful idiot, I don't care. Doesn't matter. At the end of the day, the goal here is to destroy Mike Johnson. The goal here is to get rid of his speakership before the recess in August or so, when they all leave Congress to go campaign for the fall. You've got this very narrow window between April and August to get a whole bunch of stuff through to ensure that if Donald Trump does win the election and there's a red wave in the fall, that we leave him with enough poison pills that it destroys his presidency the second time around, the same way they destroyed it the first time around. This is nothing new. We've lived through this before. This has happened before. It will happen again. The difference is we are now at 5.5% on interest rates with the Federal Reserve and a Wall Street that has looked at all of this and said, you people are crazy. We're not doing this. Yeah. And I would rather people sit down and read Jamie Dimon's 65-page note letter to shareholders and go into that deeply. Because I did this the other day for my patrons on a private, you know, I did it for what I call a morning ruminations for my patrons. So I went over for about 20 minutes and I read the whole thing and it was very clear to me what Dimon was saying. Like, we're getting ready to create a restoration of American quote unquote values within our, you know, ship of state and within our financial policy and where Wall Street is aligning itself. And that it's very clear that, again, go back to my opening remarks, the world is bifurcating, the world is re-regionalizing. And so therefore, what does that mean? That means that gold can't flow as freely around the world as it used to. Oil flowing around the world as freely as it used to be has to be denominated in something other than dollars, that there's going to have to be real collateral behind those oil shipments, and that somebody else is going to have to, you know, pick up the slack other than the United States to ensure through naval prowess that the ships get to where they go and they aren't pirated, they aren't blown up and all the rest of it, right? So that's what's on the table, folks. And that's the system. And I don't know where we're going to wind up here. Yeah. I don't know who's going to win or who's going to lose. What I know is that the big players at the table are all making their bets, are all placing their bets and making their moves right now. And the wild card in all of this are the people who are going to lose everything. And that is Bibi Netanyahu in Israel. That's the remnants of the British Maritime Empire and their web of financial and intelligence prowess in City of London, Zurich, Hong Kong, Singapore, the offshore the financial centers in the Caymans and all the rest of it. That's what's at stake here. And then, of course, continental Europe's, the vestiges of their colonial empires in places like Africa and the rest of it. So you've got all of this happening and no one wants to back down. Right. Everybody wants a seat at the table. And the problem is that the Russians and the Chinese and the Iranians and others have finally said, look, we have the oil, we have the nickel, we have the aluminum, we have the tungsten, blah, 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 blah. We have these things. You don't. Uranium, we have them. You don't. You're an unfriendly country.
Right.
You have to pay on our terms, not on your terms. And so, and in a world where you think you're going to take us to war and then come out the other side and still be in charge, you only get to do that if the United States allows it to happen by being the enforcer of this and fighting the war for them. And I'm looking around going, you know, I just had my daughter's 18th birthday. It was on Saturday. She had a couple of her friends over. They sat around all day playing on her new PS5 because I broke down and got her one for her birthday. And I watched these kids and I'm like, and I talked to them. I spent all day, you know, kind of chatting with them and whatnot. Yeah. I'm like, all these, and they're all boys. And I'm like,
no.
Yeah, these kids are not going to fight for them.
No.
Hell, we can barely get them to go and do some terrible corporate job because those jobs suck. They want something better than this. And they understand that all they have to do is just keep saying no. And that's that. And they, you know, they're 17, 16, 17, 18 years old. So they don't have a brain in their heads, but their instincts are correct.
Right. And I mean, they know something's very wrong. And frankly, that, you know, they actually do have a choice, because I agree. And also, you know, Poland and Germany and Moldova, of all places, are all talking about having drafts. And I'm thinking, do the American people really think that they're not going to try that here? But then again, you know, they've raised two generations of children that they don't have that impetus to go fight for freedom and liberty in a country that they're watching, you know, basically betray them in many ways. I think that the younger generation that you're talking about, because we have a child around that age as well, that they kind of do see much more than people think what is going on. And that this whole, as we, the parents and the people out there are fighting the DEI and CRT and all of that, if you talk to some of these kids just randomly, they're like, yeah, whatever. You know, they're just,
well, and some of them are far. And when you really sound them out, you find out that some of them are far more based than you ever thought they were. You're like, holy Christ. Like, you know, I let some stuff slip over the weekend and I'm like, well, I didn't get crucified for that. Holy crap. You know, my daughter's usually like more embarrassed because she's worried about the crap that's going to come out of my mouth. And I'm like, and then you find out that, you know, the kids are like, oh yeah, the kids are all right. But what they are is they realize that they also have parents that are not going to be willing to sacrifice them on this altar as well. So it's incumbent upon us that all we really have to do is to sit back and keep saying no and prepare. And I don't know that they're prepared for the hardships that are coming. I don't know. You know, I think their 20s are going to be very, very, they're going to be a big comeuppance for them. They're going to have to get, you know, they're going to have to get tough quick. And I feel bad for them in some respects, but it's okay. It is what it is. And we'll find out who's going to survive and who's not. But
yeah,
you know,
I mean,
America's not going to look at, we're not going to go back to the 1950s, folks. That's gone.
Yeah.
But we can go back to a version of it that, because even the 1950s weren't the 1950s, right?
Right. Exactly.
We're going to go back to something that is far more rational. And every time I talk to my millennial friends, I find out that, you know, they all have an aversion to debt and they're like, work, you know, they work two jobs and they do this. Like, huh? Like I was at your age, I was fucking off. Like, you know what I mean? I was like completely checked out, barely doing one good job, doing one job well, and just looking for every waking hour to be mine.
Yeah.
Right. Later. Like when I was in my 20s and my 30s. Because, you know, fuck the job, because the job sucks. But, you know, it is what it is. Hey, it puts food on the table and I get to, you know, I get to spend all night hanging out with my friends and doing the thing I want to do. Right. They're going to have to grow up faster than that. And they want to do that now, knowing full well that they're going to have a life where they're not going to be able to do that. I just see this. I see them all like trying to put together side gigs and, you know, be smart about it. Now, whether or not any of them are going to get married and have children and all the rest of it is a completely different issue. But, and that's a bigger problem, I think, than all the rest of it. But, you know, as far as what they see, that's, I think they see very clearly what the problem is.
We are right now in $34 trillion worth of debt. We have geopolitical chaos everywhere. The central bank digital currency is looming. The BRICS nations have expanded beyond Saudi Arabia and continue to expand. And all I know is that many experts keep telling me that gold and silver is the best way to hedge against inflation and to protect your savings going forward. Did you know you can convert your 401k and IRA into physical gold and silver today? It can be shipped direct to your door or stored in a secure location. So go to our partners page at themelkshow.com, fill out the form, and someone from Beverly Hills Precious Metals will get in touch with you right away to help you figure out the best course for you and your family ahead. Stay secure, stay safe, and prepare now. Yeah. I mean, I also, like I said, I think that there's been so much damage done to the institutions that have been established in this country that people look at them all and think, you know, who is running this country and why are we deferring to people that we didn't give our consent to anything? They don't even think about us at all at this point. They're working for, you know, I call it the parent company running America. And and that is really, you know, what people are seeing right now. But I think people are also looking for what is the way forward, because no matter what happens in 2025, we obviously have a very big problem in Washington, D.C., that the entire government, all the way out into the states and everything, is not functioning. It's not functioning as planned. It's not functioning in any way, shape, or form for the people, by the people. The people are completely left out. And I feel like the people have to now energize themselves to redefine what's going on. And, you know, the 10th Amendment debate just about abortion alone, but I think the 10th Amendment should be across the entire government. Whatever is totally unconstitutional needs to be done away with, just for the people to even have back even a semblance of a voice.
Well, I agree. And the problem is, you know, how do you do that and still not violate your libertarian Hippocratic oath, which is to do as little harm as possible. This is something that's been drilled in, that I got drilled into me 25 years ago, and I've always kept it in mind. And this is part of the reason why my analysis goes where it does, which is that what I'm trying to do is like trying to map a rational path, right, from where we are to where we're going. But remember, what's the old adage? It's always darkest before the dawn, right? And there's a cycle to everything. It has to get bad in order for people to realize, oh my God, it is that bad. And then have them all, and then have the momentum collapse and go, oh, now it's a train and we have to try and stop it or get off of it or whatever. And it's just a natural part of the process. Reforms don't happen until there's a crisis.
Right.
We all sit around and, you know, go, hey, we have the time, we have the balance sheet room, we have this, we have that, let's reform the system now. But inertia, when people are, you know, when there's food on the table and, you know, the electricity's running and, you know, and everything works, there's no desire.
Right.
Need to, or impetus for this. And, you know, in chemistry terms, there's not enough activation energy because the system is kind of at rest and kind of not too far perturbed for equilibrium, at least as you perceive it. But once it starts to go, and this is why you're trying to lead me on about bond yields is so important, is that's what you start watching. You start watching for the subtle signs of capital shifting around the world as people begin to wake up, because the people who have the money are the ones that are going to be the first ones to react because they have the most to lose. The people at the bottom have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
So sadly part of the system that we built, right? Part of that it's the cost, as it were, of Pax Americana and, you know, the post-Soviet environment that we've quote unquote built, you know, the end of this end of history environment. It was all bullshit, right? But we have to recognize that they're the ones that have the most to lose. So they're the ones who are going to react first. This is why I've been watching, you know, when you start looking at the game at every level, you can look at the individuals and know what we should do here. Well, you should shore up your local supply of food and toilet paper and all the rest of it. And if there isn't a good infrastructure for it, maybe you should go build. And
exactly.
Blah, 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 blah,
exactly.
Okay. And all of those things, emergency comms, all that stuff, right? There's all sorts of things that you can do.
Right.
Right. If nothing else, just network with people and, you know, learn how to sew and learn how to whatever. Right. But as you move up each stage of the ladder and you go all the way up to the big financial guys, they have the same concerns you do. There's just a lot more zeros after the value of the concerns that they have. And so, when they're fighting amongst themselves, that gets interesting. It's when they all agree, that's when it's all bad. But they're fighting amongst themselves right now. It's very clear. It's very obvious.
Yeah.
So, and that's a good sign for the rest of us. So here's, and I'll give you a perfect example of what I think is why I believe in some ways that we're, you know, you and I, just before we started, you said, I think we're winning. Well, kind of. Well, here's one for you. The meme that's, or the what's going around like Twitter and social media today in the wake of Iran's strike on Israel is that it's all theater. Well, no, it wasn't all theater. the theatrical aspect of it is no different than when Iran struck the base in the U.S. base in Iraq after Trump assassinated Soleimani. It wasn't theater. It was a message. And that message was, we don't actually want this to escalate, but everybody needs to save face.
Uh-huh.
The problem is in this instance, there are three players. And the third player is Israel. But Iran and the United States clearly coordinated how Iran was going to strike and how collectively Israel was going to defend itself. How that thing was designed, that attack was designed, had that element to it. It also had an immense probing of Israelis' defenses, highlighting the limits of what they can and cannot handle, the asymmetric cost right. of defense versus offense. All of those things are in play, and those are all wins for the Iranians. On the other side, you have the Americans and the Iranians. Clearly, somebody there's a line of communications, even yes. if it's just a fucking ham radio, where they're talking to each other, going, "We can't let this get out of control." And the Iranians are saying, "Now, put the Israelis on the leash." And I don't know that they can,
right?
Because Bibi Netanyahu is staring at an existential crisis.
Yep.
Okay. He has literally is staring at the end of his life, and not just his political life, but his life and everything else along with it. And the project that he's represented and all the billions of dollars of, you know, alternate trade routes that he wants to build from Israel to India, and the British government wanting to shift away from using the United States as their proxy to now wanting to shift to the Indians, which is, by the way, a theme that you and I have not talked about, but is very fucking real.
Okay.
Okay. And so you can see that those players don't want those projects to end, and they don't know how to back away from this, because narcissists do what? They do they don't back down, they double down.
Yeah.
They continue to abuse you. They continue to do what they're going to do. So this is what we're dealing with. And I don't know that we have the situation under control. I don't know that anybody has escalatory control, but I know that at the very least, what we saw on Saturday night was evidence that there are grown-ups in the room trying to stop this thing from getting out of control. The same way that the same thing is happening in between Russia and Ukraine. You always can see right. over and over again, right, who is escalating in Ukraine. It's the Ukrainian, the crazy Ukrainians we put in charge, not all Ukrainians, the crazy Ukrainians who are in charge, and their enablers in City of London or 10 Downing Street or whatever you want to put it.
Right.
That's what you need to watch out for.
Yeah. And
that's the wild card right now.
Yeah. And I think the other thing that that goes along the lines with that, too, is that both sides are being funded by the same money. I mean, basically throughout the world. And there is a higher plan there. There's not just the Agenda 2030, but also the Belt and Road Initiative. So a lot of these people have put in trillions of dollars, including Larry Fink and others, into this globalist future, like you're talking about India and changing the whole dynamic. They want that whole model that they set up of global governance. They have the WHO coming up. They have the Summit of the Futures coming up. They've invested their money, their minds, everything into a globalist future that includes having those trade routes open, that includes having the Belt and Road Initiative running, that includes all of these things that they've been putting in place now for 100 years, however long it's been going on. So that is threatened too. So you're watching also this idea that they already invested in that future that they envisioned we would walk right into, eyes wide open. And unfortunately, during COVID, many, many people started to see it rather than walking straight into it. I always thought when I started from October 7th forward, people would ask me what I thought was going on in Israel. And I'd say they need that land. You know, regardless of what you think is going on between the Jews and the Palestinians and the Israelis and all of that, there's a higher level of that they need that land. When Biden says that he's building the port, I'm like, oh, really? Yeah, of course they are. So
what a shock, right?
Bigger level of what's going on a global scale, where all of this is certainly part of a bigger plan that I call the parent company running the world right now, needs to not escalate because they have that in place and they want that to happen by any means necessary.
Right. And the blackmail here is that they'll always put us in a Hobson's choice between two bad outcomes.
Exactly.
Always. And so, like, did everybody forget that Bibi Netanyahu went to the UN with a big map of the world and drew in red marker a big new trade route between the port at Haifa and Mumbai. Like, did anybody miss this?
Right.
Like, it's true. Know, did everybody miss this, or did I go crazy? Did IQ suddenly drop? To quote Ripley from Aliens, did IQ suddenly drop? Suddenly, like, this is what's going on here. So it's clear that there's something happening here. There's a pattern of behavior that we have to tease out. Now, I'm not saying they're winning. I'm just saying that that's what their incentive is. That's what their paradigm is. That's what they're defending. On the other side, you have the American banks going, yeah, but we can rebuild America. We don't do any of this shit. Fuck you. Right. You want to do it. We don't need to do this. And we'll be happy to, like, you know, be the interlocutors and facilitate these deals. And hell, we'll even book run a lot of these deals for you if you want. But we want our pipelines, and we want you to stop bombing our freaking bridges.
Yeah.
And this is all happening right at the same time. Like, okay, we had cargo boats try to take out the Verrazano Bridge in New York. Yeah. I mean, what the fuck?
I know.
Okay. Like, yeah, this is insane. But it's not if you think about the people who are actually behind all this.
Right.
And what their incentives are and what their personality structures are. They are clearly no different than, I'll make another reference for everybody that everybody knows, like the midpoint turn in Fight Club, when the narrator beats the shit out of Angel, Jared Leto.
Right.
And Tyler Durden says to him, what in the hell was that? Or what the fuck was that, dude? I just wanted to destroy something beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. When you reach, they reach that nadir, and that's him expressing his, at his lowest, his complete and utter disdain for everything. This is who these people are.
Exactly.
And they're not going to change that. They're not going to get their, they're not going to become righted in their, they're not going to, you know, find their balance within themselves. They're not going to balance the Marla and the Tyler Durden and put a gun in their mouth, miss, and, you know, they're not going to have the end of Fight Club where they have their awakening. Their awakening is going to be, it's time for you to go into the home, Mr. Schwab. And there's the picture of Donald Trump, and show me your tongue. There's time for your medication. Show me, like I've said a million times, that's what's coming.
Yeah.
If we're lucky, that's the best possible outcome.
I agree, but I don't 100%.
See that as the best. I don't see that as the likely outcome. What I see is a far worse outcome.
Well, they're not going down without doing everything they possibly can. I mean, we both talked about it a long time ago during the COVID Davos meeting. I mean, George Soros made a speech that was terrifying. And at the very end, he basically was like, well, if we don't get that, then we're going to just blow up the world. And ever since that speech of Soros, basically that's what they've done, the controlled demolition of the planet, and, you know, bringing up Donald Trump. So I often say to people that they miss some one point in all of this, whether they love him or hate him. He did pull out of a lot of pieces of the global governance model that was put in place over decades. So when he's pulling out of the WHO or UNESCO or the Migration Pact or Paris Climate Accords and all this stuff, see,
Trans Participation Partnership, TPP, and all that stuff. Yeah.
These were big blows that I don't think most of the American people really understood that he was threatening the people we're talking about, the people that have invested their future, the great resetters, let's call them. They were all in. I believe that when Obama signed on to Agenda 2030 in 2015, he expected fully for Hillary to come in 2016 and continue down that path. And Trump comes in and he starts pulling apart this plan that they're all invested on, the Clinton Global Initiative. Everything they're doing was invested in this, BlackRock, the whole. And so there's an aspect of that the persecution, which I believe is a persecution of Donald Trump at this point, which is so outlandish, has very little, I think, to do with America. I think a lot of what's going on really has to do with the globalist vision that they want, and he got in the way, and they're not tolerating him getting in the way anymore. And when I trace these lawsuits, they go all the way up to Brookings. The people that are really writing these lawsuits are not the district attorneys or Jack Smith. They are the same people that were involved in Crossfire Hurricane and the Mueller report. They work with, the international law firms and obviously not just Brookings. There's a whole bunch of other NGOs, and they're all funded by these globalists that are invested in this future global governance, Pan Am, you know, rules over the wards model. So to me, when I'm watching the Donald Trump stuff, as much as it's disturbing, I still believe that it's that the people of America are looking at it through one lens, but that the people that have the stakes that are really need to make sure he never, the populist movement, as they call it, or a Klaus Schwab standing up there being like, there's a dangerous libertarian idea of nationalism. That's what we're fighting. It's either the nation state model remains and we find a way to get along that is outside the bogus model of the UN and their tentacles, or they continue down this path. And to them, I think Trump is an existential threat to that, like Bolsonaro and other people. What is your take on what's going on with Trump right now on
well,
that?
I agree with all that. What I'll also tell you is that, again, let's go back to my what I said before about a Hobson's choice.
Right.
Hey, look, man, if they either put Trump in jail and they ruin the concept of, you know, the elections, or they corrupt every friggin' institution for us to hate them all.
Yeah.
And they get the exact same outcome. The persecution of Donald Trump is a double-edged sword that leads, or it's two paths that lead to the same outcome. You choose a little left, he wins, and then so then they'll do, like, at the end of the day, that's what they're doing, right? Because even if Trump is vindicated, even if he beats all these stupid lawsuits, they don't put him in jail, they don't do this, they don't do it, and they don't steal the election, in the end, they will still damage the psyche and the... Yeah. The cohesion of the American system to the point where we won't trust anything anymore. Like, Mel, I've talked about this before, and again, I've talked about it in other contexts. I'm like, why? Just another example. Why is everybody? I hate to bring it up again, but I'm going to. Why is everybody all of a sudden questioning whether or not we landed on the moon? It's not because there's not some credible evidence that we did or we didn't, or was it technically feasible or any of the rest of it. It's because they want us to question anything good and decent that may have ever been done. They want us to question everything to the point where we don't believe anything, because once you've got people in a state where they don't believe and they don't believe anything is real, then they can produce fiction after fiction after fiction, and you can't tell what anything is anymore.
Yeah,
that's the strategic play here. Okay, hey dudes, if I were Emperor Palpatine, this is what I would do to you.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Right.
Yeah,
it's the Phantom. I mean, like, Lucas was so ahead of his time in explaining just this in that respect. I mean, Palpatine in the prequels is a perfect example of what I'm talking about, where he used everybody to his own devices. And it's really brought out in the Clone Wars series, by the way. If you guys haven't watched it, you should, because yeah, it's really, like, the points are made, the corruption of the Jedi Order and all of that stuff. And it's a metaphor for what we're seeing today, a metaphor for the destruction of the institution so that the people themselves turn against the Jedi, the Old Republic, everything. We're going to turn away from our courts, from the FBI, from everything. We don't believe in anything anymore. We don't believe in Hollywood. We don't believe in nothing. Right. Disney, all of it. It's all to be destroyed. Why? Because if we destroy all the beautiful things that keep the society running, then how hard is it to blow up a bridge here, co-opt a farm there, blow up a pipeline there, whatever, and have everybody just freeze and everybody hate themselves and everybody hate each other more than anything else, so that we have that ridiculous little psychodrama that Obama called Leave the World Behind be the model for all of our interpersonal relationships everywhere, up and down the entire spectrum of the society. That's what you're fucking fighting.
Yeah.
So don't care whether we went to the moon or not. Doesn't matter. It's designed as chum. That's bait, that is, for you to get lost in that, because then you're thinking to yourself, well, if I can prove that, then it proves all these other things are fake. And no, it doesn't. It doesn't prove a fucking thing. It proves that you are susceptible to propaganda just like everybody else is. And I hate to be the fucking bearer of bad news here on this. And I'm not saying that I'm not susceptible to this either. I'm uniquely susceptible to all of it. We all are, but you have to be willing to admit that you're susceptible to it in order to be able to consciously see it for what it is and be able to step back, remove yourself emotionally from it, and try and assess the information as it comes by, and be willing to be generous on some things and be skeptical on other things. And that way you reserve your emotion for trying to get people passionate about being more sophisticated observers of the fucking propaganda. Right. That's what I put all my energy into. That's what gets me really excited.
Well, that's why I have you on.
Not the issues themselves. I can't light my hair on fire over the FISA 702 thing. And in my estimation, I'm like, that has a 5% chance of going anywhere. Okay, it went through the House. Fine. Goes through the Senate somehow by hook or crook, because Mitt Romney signs off on it. And then Joe Biden goes, no.
Yeah,
like, it's fine. It's a piece of legislation, folks. This is the way our government works.
Yeah, but it's not even about that. The whole 702 debate is tip of the iceberg. The NSA already is doing this. They don't care about having a warrant. That went away a long time ago. So to me, it's like, so they're just telling us. They don't give it.
Again, what do you think Five Eyes is about, folks? If we can't do it here in the United States, then you use the other four eyes to look at the United States, and then we get the information from GCHQ.
Yeah. And don't forget the 2019.
This is not hard.
And all the big tech companies went in with the NSA and DHS and all of them a long time ago. And Holder and Obama created the National Security Division to be the persecutors for them. And I mean, we are in a place where everyone in America is being spied on for any reason whatsoever by any number of agencies.
Mel, go listen to Mike Benz's interview with Tucker Carlson carefully. And you'll realize that they've been doing this shit since the day they invented television.
Right. Yeah. So that's why I think that the debate, because to me, the biggest problem in America right now is that we're not free, because everyone is being spied on. Nobody has any privacy in America. And the people are sitting here, I think, willingly, eyes wide open, walking into something bigger than that, because you and I both know the next level to this, if they are to keep going, is that this is, like you said, the Five Eyes nations have a deal with the NSA. We know the CIA is everywhere. So what the next step would be is that the powers that we hope will fail in this, but what they do want, the totalitarian technocracy of Agenda 2030, is for us all to be on a global track and trace surveillance system where we have zero privacy and zero freedom and zero auto-determination and all of that. And that
and
is
turn
why
it over to turn it over to AIs to actually run. And so that they don't even need people to run the damn thing. And then it's just THX 1138.
Right. Exactly. And that's the real danger.
Literally, it's literally that movie. It's literally the world.
Enough, it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you would think he'd be out there talking a little bit more about this, but I don't think they can. But I have to tell you, this is the real danger to our country is really about, I think, liberty and individual liberty and freedom and these real honest to goodness things that, you know, we've taken for granted all along. I do believe they're on the chopping block, because when I look at the 2023 September declaration by the O'Biden-Harris administration on their commitment to Agenda 2030 halfway and the global goals, and you read through that, still on the White House website at this point, they outline all 17 goals, and then about $3 trillion of our money going towards globalist institutions, as if that's a done deal. And 2025 forward, that is a done deal if they get that. And if they get a mandate in their minds and, you know, they steal 2024 or whatever happens or the election, they're going to triple down on what they're doing. But I don't think that's the danger. I think the danger is the next level of turning us into a cog in a globalist wheel, and the American people not realizing your nation state is in danger. And now we have this choice between Trump and Biden. And I don't think it has anything to do with Trump or Biden. I think it has to do with what does the individual American want for their future?
I agree. And then we have to look at the other side of this, which is that how do they, like, see, again, I look at this from that perspective and then I start really going to geopolitics, and I say to myself, and there's a whole lot of other people out there going, you know, that's nice, but we're not going to go along with this.
Right.
The world is a lot bigger place than they can, like, what they want is to control 99% of the available capital and have that under total surveillance. And then the rest of it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
That doesn't matter. Then the other 4 billion people don't matter because there's useless eaters to these people anyway. Which
right.
They, you know, they're going to sacrifice them on the altar of globalism anyway. Like, why do you think they only want 500 million people in the world or a billion people? Because right. They know they can't run a system with 9 billion people or 7.5 billion people or whatever. They know the system doesn't work. I just think that part of our job is to not light our hair on fire. And in my case, I can't. But in your case, you have a lot. So you better, you know, watch yourself.
I could do it for you.
Is, you know, I know they outlawed asbestos and all that. But to not light our hair on fire at the end of the day and say, look, all you have to do is say no.
From our farms to your family, all organic protein, fruits, vegetables, gut health, immune support, and so much more. We have products for weight loss and collagen and muscle building, products for children, athletic performance, and 30-day programs for just $12 a day. You can save $50 on your first purchase of $75 or more with the code MelKWellness. Go to the MelKShow.com partners page and check out MelK Superfoods today.
Your best move is to just keep saying no and to keep slowing everything down.
Okay.
Like Ayn Rand wasn't wrong in Atlas Shrugged. John Galt wasn't wrong. I think he was an asshole, but he wasn't wrong.
Right.
Okay.
I agree.
Look, if you deny them your best, if you deny them, if they ask for the paperwork, give them all the paperwork. Drown them in it. You know why? They don't have enough time to process all the paperwork.
That's what they do. Because anyone that's gone right. through this current DOJ iteration of them coming after you, be it these lawyers or anyone else that I've talked to, even a Peter Navarro, they give them millions of documents and say, find what you need in there. So, you know what I mean?
Bury
that's lawfare. That's how they're doing it.
Yeah, I know. That's what they're doing. So we do the same thing. We turn around. Dr. Gary North, rest his soul, you know, said this ages ago. They want all the paperwork for all this stuff. Fine. Give it to them. You know, fill it out wrong and hand send it in. Right. Every piece of paper they want. Let them deal with it. If everybody does that, eventually they'll stop asking for the paperwork. Eventually, the paperwork won't even be looked at. Eventually, it'll be a stack on some third class, on some functionary's desk. That he's got a mountain, he's got an inbox as tall as any stack of paper you saw in Terry Gilliam's Brazil. And it's just going to sit there and keep mounting and mounting and mounting and mounting. Eventually, it's going to blow up or crush him or whatever, or, you know, become coal or, you know, and that's it. Because it's never going to get processed. He'll process a couple of pieces of paper a day, just enough. He's checking out just enough to keep his job and not get fired. If everybody does that all the way around the line, at the end of the day, And you can't automate all these tasks with AI because the AIs are dumb.
Right.
And then you have the people programming the AIs who are also, last I checked, not down with the system either. So, like, at the end of the day, you want to introduce, like, if you think that you're going to, you know, get all of this stuff past these kids who already at 15, 16, 17 years old have a better understanding of how to hack various systems.
Yeah.
Like, you think they're playing video games and they're not learning anything? News for you, folks.
Oh,
they're learning
no.
how to hack every fucking thing.
Right.
And so they know exactly where to insert malicious code into the system and then watch the code flourish. And they do it for funsies.
I know. I have one of those because kids that does that.
They're like, oh, this is going to be cute. I mean, you know, eventually
see if they can do it.
You take that skate punk kind of mentality, what we would call skate punks, my generation, and you put that into cyberspace, and all of a sudden, like Klaus Schwab's grand dreams of total German surveillance is just dumb. It fails spectacularly in ways that would just be hilarious, unintentionally hilarious. So, again. I'm not trying to minimize the threats that are in front of us, but at the same time, we have to be realistic that none of these systems are as powerful as they think they are. They're very, very freaking brittle because they're not particularly anti-fragile. And, you know, we can see them.
Right. That's the problem they didn't have in the past. That's the problem Brzezinski and Kissinger and the Crown and all these architects of a lot of this stuff didn't have in the past was people see them. And COVID, I think, tripled down on people seeing them. So, you know, that's why I say
the vaccines are huge. every day. I live just north of the People's Republic of Alachua County. You know this, in Gainesville. And I can tell you that, you know, when you interface with people, you know, and you realize that slowly but surely they're all turning around and going,
I know
this person died. And they're like, look, I'm not trying to, this is not political here. I feel for you. You know, it's terrible. And look at what they did to you. And look at what they've done to your, to your fertility and for this, and to this, right, and all these things. Like, they hate you. And your life may be over.
Well, you were disposable. People have to start having righteous indignation that these people that facilitated this thought that they were disposable, like unnecessary. And if anyone lives a life where they inside themselves are okay with that, you know, then those people are lost forever.
Then, you know, then go to the move to Canada and buy a pod and do the assisted suicide thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you believe that,
according to UCLA Medical School.
Yeah. They literally look at us as if they look at us as bad farmers, which is that they see us as livestock. Okay.
Exactly.
And their livelihood in their minds does not depend on that livestock. See, having raised livestock, I can tell you that the farmer lives his entire day worried about his livestock because his livestock is expensive. And they require a lot of care and upkeep and everything else. You are the servant to these friggin' lower, quote unquote, lower order animals.
Right.
Well, these people don't see it that way. They see themselves as the masters, like bad animal owners. And, you know, these are just lesser beings that they can dominate. And we'll just get rid of a few of them. We'll keep the good ones and we'll get rid of the, you know, and they're playing that game. They don't realize that all you're doing is creating systems and creating people that, so especially since they're people that one hate you, they're not goats, so they're tool using monkeys, by the way, and you know they have agency and they have a brain, blah 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 blah, and you've put them in systems that can't possibly sustain themselves with those people operating those systems are too complex.
Right.
So what we're really more worried about is them attacking the foundations and the pillars of society in order to maintain their control that then cause a complexity collapse that no one can deal with.
Right.
Because there's not anybody left smart enough to know how anything works. No. That's the bigger danger. That's why it's so very important to wrap this up. That's why. If you don't know what to do right now, the other day I was talking to my wife and I said, you know, I can't get to sleep before 3 o'clock in the morning. I have this creeping feeling of dread all over my head as we approach the month of May. And I know what's going, I can see what's coming in the next 4 to 6 weeks and the whole thing with Israel and Iran, I could see it coming. And she just turned to me and I said, I don't know what to do about this. And she said, in times like these, when you feel like you have zero control, best thing to do is to work on yourself. That's all you can, what you have control over. My wife is a very wise woman that's taken a long time to become very wise. It's like just like the rest of us do. And whatever wisdom I have, you know, I try to share. And this is, I think, the most important part. Find something that makes you better.
Yeah.
And something better yourself that brings you joy, that brings you peace of mind. Better yourself in some way, improve your health, improve your financial health, improve whatever it is. I don't care. Pick one thing. The list can be this long. We all have a to-do list on how to better ourselves. it's like George Carlin and the scroll of the words you can't say on TV. Right.
Yeah.
It's enormous. It's no longer just seven, but pick the top seven, work on one of them for a little while. And you'll feel better about all of this. And you will have some sense of stability in yourself. And that will help you get through the next thing. And then you can pass that on to the people around you. And they told two friends and they told two friends. And eventually we all have hair that's not on fire, but smells good.
Yeah. And, you know, that's the best thing you could say. And I've been saying that too. I've been working on a book. And my one thing is too many people are looking outside instead of inside at a time when our insides are the most important thing. Because like you said earlier, you're describing what Bezmenov's demoralization campaign, and we're really far into the past the crisis phase, and people can make a choice. And I think that choice is inside, not outside. And I hope a lot of people hear this and hear what you're saying, because you do have power, and that power is, unlimited if you go inside. If you keep trying to fight it outside or aligning outside, everything outside is not controllable. Everything inside, you have a shot.
So, yep.
Yeah, thank you so much.
None of us are any good at actually, reacting to stimuli. We're all we're all a mess on the interior. Yeah. But, pick one aspect of yourself, work on it, move on. For example, tomorrow I will spend an hour with my therapist trying to work on something new.
Oh, yeah.
Or something unresolved, and we'll move on from there.
Hey, I've been doing the same thing. I encourage everyone else to do it. The one thing you have is you, and you, and making yourself the best you can be is the best way to fight this, I think, more than anything else. So thank you so much, sir, as always. And good luck in your journeys to better yourself. And everyone out there should take that advice very seriously. Instead of worrying about all the things you can't control, worry about the thing you can, which is yourself. Thank you so much, sir. Appreciate it.
Take care, Mel. It's always good seeing you, as always. Be well.
Great news, guys. We've been beta testing with my founding members, the Mel K Show, live on Sunday nights at 7 p.m. And it is going incredibly well. We have a community that we all connect. We can share information. Questions are asked of me, of other people. We share back and forth. This is really a place to go on Sunday nights. Get ready for the week. Share what's working, what's not working, how we can make things better, how we can align with each other. Wherever you are in the country, there's many things you can do. So we've added Locals now. So on Locals, you can also join us on Sunday nights, or you can join members.themelkshowlive.com. The members at MelKShowLive.com is a community for you that continues 24/7, 7 days a week. We put up many different things there, ideas, documentaries that are great. People tell what they're doing in their local community. They can reach out to other people all over the country. It's kind of has a cool Facebook vibe, but it's really about community, fellowship, helping each other, organizing, all of that. You can also just join Locals and join us on Sunday nights, where you can ask questions, interact with me. I'm going to have on some of my best guests. It's an incredible platform. It's just getting started. It's totally secure. And please join us Sundays at 7 p.m. Locals or members.themelkshowlive.com. I will see you there. This is so much fun, and I'm so grateful. And now we have a totally secure community where we can all interact while we are fighting this battle for freedom and our future. See you there. You know that there are more than 60,000 known chemicals in tap water, and the EPA only tests for 91 of them? This is why we're so grateful that we partnered with Healthy Hydration. They offer whole home water filtration, shower filters, under-the-counter pre-filters, molecular hydrogen water machines, hydrogen water bottles, and so much more for a healthier home and family. So go to themelkshow.com and click on our partners page and check out Healthy Hydration and everything they have in store for your health and wellness today.